I'm easy, man.
We're here. Three coaches. Two of them are Miller Elite. One, Symbiote Strength. Yes, I'm back on my own. Yes, I'm very, very happy that I'm back on my own.
You look back.
It, we were supposed to do this last week, and then Braden asked us on the questionnaire. He's like, can I join? And we were like, sure. And fortunately, Dylan was a little busy. So it's just so I'm to line up that our next episode is including the man. He hasn't been on in a while, but he's back. At least for one episode. We'll see. Maybe he'll come back for many more if he likes us enough after this one. We're not getting deep today with everybody. Me and Dylan will not go down a psychological route as we have in the last three episodes. We just go off tangents and rabbit holes, but people love us, hopefully.
We're going to stay in the puddles. We're going to stay out of the ocean today. We're just going to play in puddles. Yeah. They're a little shallower.
Yeah, exactly. We'll do a cool last 7 days. I guess we'll follow every other podcast that has guests on. I added a client today, which is pretty cool. He's another 22-year-old, another young gun. I got some big things happening. You guys both know what's happening. I will not announce what is happening with one of my clients, but we got some cool things. I got some cool things in the works. This summer will be pretty cool for me in general as a coach, I think, in terms of my clientele and where I'm going. That's pretty cool. I'm back on my own, like I said. Really happy coming back and running my own business again, for at least the time being. I enjoy what I love, and I was getting away from it. What I wasn't loving out was I wasn't getting much out of it, and now I feel really fulfilled again, doing my own thing already, setting a new tone in terms of the culture that I'm building with my athletes. So everything is going great this week. Can I just get to Canada? That's the only thing that would be better. If I can get to Canada and come see you guys, that would probably just make my life a lot better. So who wants to go next? Anybody?
What did you do? Sorry, I missed that. I mean,
Last seven days.
Oh, I see. Okay. I just missed that part. What's the last 7 days? It's been really busy for me too. Honestly, I have the most irons in the fire that I've ever had at one time for sure. And they're also the biggest ones. I have a lot going on, and sometimes I wake up very surprised that this is my life, to be quite frank. But I'm figuring it all out, so it's been good. I added, I think, four new clients this week, so that was really good. A couple more like functional nutrition type stuff that I like doing, and then a couple of them were more competitor physique based, so that's also fun. I'm starting to get a few more clients in that kind of realm. And that's what I really want to try and work on this year and expand more so than sort of the functional side of my business. And obviously having Braden's help now being part of Team Miller is really going to be exciting for me to learn a lot from him. So.
Awesome.
Very excited for that as well over here. Very, very excited for that. So we're going to have some fun. I can tell you that much.
How was your last 7 days, big boy?
Oh man, it's can't remember. No, it's been good. It's very, very busy over here too, but busy is good, man. I know me and Dylan have a couple cool things in the works. The team as a whole has a couple really cool things in the works. So I've been working a little bit on the back end and that kind of stuff. And then obviously just trying to continue to take care of the athletes. And I got a lot of obviously competition seasons coming up here. So got a lot of athletes were in pre-prep phases or transitioning into prep phases. You and I have talked about this before, Anthony. I think we're kind of always in prep, and I don't really like saying, okay, here's the show, we're starting prep at 16 weeks out. And there's situations where it ends up happening like that. But ideally, like in Tyler's situation, it's more so like, all right, we're 23 weeks out, we're 18 weeks out, whatever. This is a position we're at. We're just going to keep making adjustments and then kind of put our finger on the show, whatever show we land on. Like I know we originally were, had been talking about doing a show here called the Alberta Open, and it's a great show. But again, I was like, I don't want to rush you to that point. We had gotten some bloods done and there was still some hematocrit, hemoglobin stuff going on there. So it's just like, you know what, we're not touching any PEDs just yet, so let's keep riding this phase out. We're going to keep pulling body fat and we'll get some more bloods done and whatnot, and things have just kind of fallen in place, and we might make it for that show still here with not having to push the PEDs too much. But if we don't, great. We have a backup plan with other shows in the books. And that's kind of, for me, that's how I like doing that. So yeah, in a long roundabout way, it's busy, but it's good. Really excited for the athletes I do have stepping on stage here this year. I'm not focusing on putting a ton on stage. I think I had a conversation with you about this. I've said to a lot, and Dylan and I have talked about this too. I've said to a lot of athletes, like, hey, we're going to get you on stage. It's just like right now is not the time. I don't want to rush this, because what ends up happening there, you might not get the placing you deserve because you just don't have the tissue or you haven't made the improvements you need to improve. So why get up there right now? Right. And that's hard to hear as an athlete, but at the same time, you're going to be a better bodybuilder when you get up there. So like I said, I'm not putting a crazy amount of athletes on stage this year, but I think the ones we do put on stage is going to be, it's going to be for some fun. I got a couple pro debuts between Maverick and Tessa in bikini. So excited for those, and preps are getting rolling. So that's basically it, man. Doing the thing. I had a couple extra off meal plans this week because there were so many damn birthdays lined up this week. So kind of feel like a little fatty on my end, but I've been eating good. So
fuck you. Just
I know you're in a fat loss phase, so I was waiting to hear it, man. You see my 16 ounce filet on my story the other day.
I was going to comment, but I decided not to. I wanted to be nice.
Would have been a little bit overly aggressive.
Yeah, I was gonna be. Yeah, I was gonna. But no, I've been craving like homemade Italian food, man. Like nice chicken parm. Like give me.
Well, I went to an Italian restaurant last night for my mom's birthday.
Of course you did. So. Of course. You did. It's fine. All right. Well,
listen, I'm sitting over here. Like, honestly, guys, I've been fat for so long. I'm like, I'll eat just liver and fucking lettuce. Like, yeah. I'll eat just to be not. If I could be shredded, to be honest, you guys, it's why I'm not. Part of why I'm not bigger than I should be, because even though I didn't do a lot of things super right, it's mostly if I would have just eaten more, because I just don't like having, I had body fat my whole life. I know exactly what it looks like, you know. So like I like looking like Captain America. I think it's sick.
we'll have you keep your raw liver. I'll try that whenever I come visit you. I'll guarantee that. That will be the one time I try it just for you. But you can keep that to you and your clients for yourself over there. I'm chilling. But we're here. We got three coaches, one Q&A. All right, let's get at it. Who wants to ask the first one? Dylan, Dylan first.
I'll go first.
Pick us a good one. Start off strong.
Here. What's the biggest tip you'd give other trainers that have helped us be better coaches? And I don't think I would like to maybe name more than one thing, because I think there's two or three things that would probably fit in here. So I'll take my stab at it, and I'd be curious to see what you guys can add or expand on either way. So I think I have a really good take on this now, like in my career now versus at any time. I think that hiring competent coaches the entire time that you're trying to coach is probably the biggest return on investment you're going to see for your spend. Because a lot of these functional health courses that people don't realize how much education adds up. Anthony and I have kind of talked, we did an episode on like how much it costs basically. And it's like a lot of money, you know? So like for $5,000, I've taken courses like 2-3 in a row like that cost that much, you know? And at least, whilst doing like other mentorships, it adds up. Those are just like the kind of the $1,000 pieces that start to add up. When you could pay a coach, like a really good coach, you know, like me putting money into Braden or something, like that pays for my whole year of coaching, if not longer, depending on who you're hiring. But you can learn a lot from just having a really competent coach. And then the second thing is learning to be an eye coach. I'm lucky enough to coach, I think, like 16 other coaches. And half of them are kind of in like a, I don't like calling it a mentorship. I call it continued education, because I don't feel like I've earned the right to do mentorships. Like I look at someone like Matt Jansen, that's who does mentorships. You know, like Victor, he did a mentorship with me. You know, like Scott Stevenson's doing one with me. That's someone who can, I think, say mentor. So I'm careful to slide that out, and I don't advertise. It happened by accident. I just ended up getting so many other coaches locally that like they started asking me if I would do something like this. And I was like, well, geez, there's obviously a demand, so I'm going to provide. So I did. And I really like it. But what I noticed, the huge pattern, is coaches are very scared to try anything. And I just happen to be able to help these people so much because not because I practice, not because anything, my personality trait leaning and just like the life I've lived, I'm the opposite. Like I want to try everything, you know, like it was harder. I had to learn as a coach to like stay the course. That was way harder for me to learn than just like trying a variable, as where I would be the coach when I was young and making a bunch of mistakes to change too many things. It would be like, okay, now you're getting the supersets. You're going to get jacked this week. Like everything would have had like an indirect or a direct causation effect now in my mind, you know, when I was like a 22-year-old trainer. So I would say, you know, but a lot of people, I feel like, especially with social media, because it's easy to get negativity. And that's what will, I do this. I was just talking to Braden, you know, like where if one person says like, well, do you even know what you're talking about? And then coach is like, well, maybe I don't. And it scares them from ever trying anything again, you know? So just like really trying to just figure out what you know and throw accurate darts based on the skills that you have, but do it repeatedly. Try to get a little bit better every time, figure out what you did wrong. And then, cause you're going to make mistakes. Anthony says all the time.
Yeah. Well, I think that's where I would go, I guess, with this, right? Is kind of just make mistakes, right? But own up to them too. Right. I think that's the biggest part with coaches. And I think that's the biggest part with social media, right? Is you want to just post all the good ones and you want to post everything about not making mistakes with these clients or doing the wrong thing initially. Like I can go back and remember like the first like few clients, and we were actually chatting about this on the other podcast I was a guest on this week. And I was like, man, I can go back and look at the clients I had and I would take them so differently because of what I have now. Like I didn't have skill work to read blood work, or I didn't have, in terms of looking at these things or what people were dealing with and kind of tailoring it to them, right? Like I made those mistakes with those clients, and guess what? I ultimately lost those clients, right? like it was more so that, but I've accepted that on the chin, and you kind of grow from that. Like that's what made the decision to move to like invest in Austin as my mentor came from, right? Was those things like starting, was those clients starting to escape me so I could learn, hey, what were the mistakes I was making? And how to adjust my plans and everything, so that when I like I've learned from you, so when I do throw that dart, it is accurate. But I think that's also where I would take this in terms of the make mistakes, is be willing to throw a dart and just see what happens. Because you know, like Brayden and I and Dylan, we all have like clients that have been with us for over a year or like a year plus, and they are probably on the more competitive side. You really can learn. Like when someone takes it that seriously as the coach does, you really have a unique opportunity to throw darts that are pretty dang accurate. I think that's the beauty of having competitors, right? And that's why we all strive to get more competitors on our teams, is we are able to just enjoy the process with it a lot better. There's less to worry about, more fun darts to throw at the board. There's more types of things, more trials that you're more willing to give, right? Because it ultimately comes down to like, the trust in the person to execute the plan. That, and then I guess another tip just to kind of give one, but belief in yourself. Like I said, you got to take those mistakes and learn from it, but you got to believe in everything that you do, right? Your clients trust in you to make these decisions. Like, especially when it comes down to physique enhancement, if we're talking about competitors, or even if we're talking about functional health, like those moves that you make are calculated enough to where if you make a mistake, it's not going to be the end of the world, but it might end up turning you back like four steps instead of one step forward, right? Or it could be detrimental to their health in a way too. So, you know, having a belief in what you're going to do for that client and how you're going to approach them and how you even communicate with them says a lot about how successful you will be too.
100%. I agree with literally everything you guys have said here. So, but I can pick up and kind of say my own piece there. So I talked about this morning, actually, with our team, with Dylan there as well. Really, really paying attention to finite details, right? So, and tracking and paying attention to things and drawing your own roadmap so you can better draw conclusions in the future, right? And we were talking about this morning. Like for instance, something I personally do is when I'm going through a check-in and I'm updating, making changes to a plan or something, I'm making notes in a section on the biofeedback aspect where I collect information from my clients so that when I'm making my decisions, I can look at the notes that I've taken and said, okay, here's what's happened. Here's how the physique has responded when I made this change. Okay, this is happening again. Hypothetically, maybe blood glucose is creeping up. Well, let's look at what decisions we have made as of lately. Have we increased training volume, right? That kind of stuff, right? So be hyper detail focused, I think, but also not to the point that it literally stresses people out. Because that's also another thing, right? And we have to really kind of, it's a balancing act, but that's one, just paying a really, give your athletes the attention they deserve. Because at the end of the day, if you're not, that's not going to be good coaching. So you're going to lose those athletes. But at the same time, you have one job. These individuals, these people are paying you to do that job. So do it well, right? And that stems over to what Dylan was saying. You have to be willing to spend money to become a better coach. And I get messages, I cannot tell you how often, of people saying, how do I become a trainer? How do I become a coach? I just signed up for this weekend course. And I never want to feel like I'm speaking down to somebody, but it's like, listen, you genuinely think taking a $250 course over 2 days turns you into a coach that you actually can take people's health into your hands? I'm sorry, that's not how it works, right? Like, look how much time we've spent in this field investing in our education and whatnot. And again, it's nobody's on a pedestal compared to other people. There might be people who have never done a damn thing, but just are so involved in reading studies and educating themselves that they know a ton, right? But I'll tell you this much, the smartest people I know, the people I've worked with, from Matt Jansen to Luke Miller right now, like I was saying to you guys, to Austin, all these people have one thing in common. They've all invested in their own education along the way. Coaches have coaches. Like Dylan said, I coach Dylan. I have coaches. You have a coach. I really realistically don't know a good coach that doesn't really have a coach, right? So it's there's so much to be able to learn from it. Whether you're actually taking lessons directly from that coach and they're actually teaching you things, or you're reverse engineering what they're doing with you, if you have the ability to do that, you're going to be able to learn a ton of valuable information and pass that on to people eventually down the road. And then it's just the ripple effect, right? Because like Dylan said, I also coach a ton of coaches. And I'll tell you what, if those coaches are paying attention to what I'm doing with them, rather than, like, a lot of them are going to ask questions for sure. And I'm going to answer those questions because, again, it comes back to the impact we want to have, right? If I help this coach and they have 50 athletes on their roster, I may have just helped 50 people. But in the same breath, if you're asking questions, but you're not paying attention to what I'm actually doing to you based on your biofeedback, you're missing a very important piece of the puzzle that you could be learning from, right? So reverse engineering what's happening to you when you're working with a coach is a very, very valuable tool. And I feel like that's something myself I've learned a lot from, whether that was when I was being coached or I was just throwing my darts at myself, trying things and like, yo, this worked great. All right, let's figure out why. Let's see the reasoning behind why this worked. And now you can expand on that and start to utilize that in other areas, right? So, yeah, no, I agree with everything you guys are saying.
Yeah, I think that's a big one right there. Like, in terms of just reverse, I say this, I've said this multiple times actually on the podcast before. I'm like, I've learned a lot about carb cycling and everything by just reverse engineering what Mark was doing. And like, whenever he would increase food, I kind of would make my little notes over, hey, why are we, I would ask myself, I would challenge myself as a coach as to why he's doing that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't just ask him because they're kind of, but he always used to be the same way. He's the same way as Dylan. Like, if you think about, like, I remember asking him one time, hey, why are we increasing fats this one time? Like, I asked him that and he's like, you know, as a coach, he's like, you're going to learn that sometimes you just got to throw things at it and see what happens.
Straight up.
So yeah.
There's sometimes, like, as much as, and I think it's funny, it's as much as we are making very educated decisions and normally we're going to have an explanation for why we're doing something sometimes. And I'll tell an athlete straight up. They're like, well, why are we doing that? Like, if it's a drug application or something, that's different.
Yeah.
But if we're talking about, why are you increasing rice and not almonds? It's like, well, at this point, I might not know enough about your physique and how you respond to food changes, whether it's from carbohydrates or fats. But at sometimes it's just like, well, this is just the play we're making. Like, you know what I mean? This is, we're going to throw this dart and we're going to see what happens.
Yeah. I find that a lot too. And actually I kind of came up with, so because to a lot of people that come to me, tracking and measuring biofeedback or biometrics is very new, obviously. So then I've made like a templated sort of explanation, a layman's explanation of why I do that. And then
layman's.
Yeah. That was, you see, you got a good sense of humor. I was making a joke and I was so funny. But anyway, so I, if I make a change, I always reference to in that sort of piece of literature that they've gotten when they started with me, I'll always say, remember when I told you that the biofeedback a lot of the time is I'm making a protocol change and that's asking your body a question. And then the biofeedback will dictate the answer to me because I'm looking for a pattern. And then they're like, oh, okay, that makes a lot of sense, right? Because like if I throw, because some, and that helps me. And because I think of it like that, I get aggressive. And I like that about my style of coaching. Like I'll bump someone like 50 grams of carbs. And then I'm like, let's just see. Oftentimes you guys, I'll have a girl that's like been at, you know, like Anthony, you'll have to convert this about 100, let's say, blood glucose, something like that. They'll be at like 5 and they're training hard. Like all their other biofeedback's good. And then I get mad because I can't get it down. And I'm like, okay, 55 carb bump in training days. Like what? And I'm like, yeah, for sure. Because I know that like a week is nothing, literally nothing. You know, like it's nothing is happening in 1 week with a 55 carb bump almost for anyone. And especially these girls that are training harder. And then all of a sudden we'll see a 4.3. How did that happen? Well, that tells me that I was way under feeding you and the training demands that I've requested of you were way too high. So it was way out of balance. So we just got it in question, you know, or got it in balance. Your body told me the answer that was obviously a good thing for you. Now we're rolling. So imagine like if I was just 5 carbing her to death in that process.
Yeah.
Well, man, it's like, it would have taken, yeah, you'll get there, but like she would have probably suffered a bit to get.
Whoever does 5 carb bumps is fucking awful. I don't know. I would never.
Sometimes I
20,
do.
I just 20 don't calories.
Like, hey,
like buddy, hey. I can get that from it every day in chewing gum for fuck's sake.
Bro, I'm just gonna add. Hey, whoever, I'm just gonna add like 5 grams of carbs and just see what it's gonna do. Like, let's just see what it does. Like, at least do like 20, 25 gram carb jumps. Like, I'm not like I still like to work a food, but I'm not an ass about it. I'm not going to be like, here's 25 calories or 20 calories.
Here's 4 grains of rice. Let's see if it fills you up.
Yeah. Well, there's too many errors in inherent food labels anyway. Right. Cause like when people, I always tell people
20% inaccuracy or something like that.
Like, you know, it's crazy. People that get like really obsessed about having their numbers like as close to zero as they can. And I'm like, you realize that yesterday, if you were 10 over and over, technically you probably could have been closer to the actual target than what this is, because like if you changed your food sources and you just the packaging's different or something, you know, like a lot of these packaged foods,
they're
labeled all weird, like for 1/5 of the package or 130 grams, but the package is like not a denomination that you can just divide that into really easy. You're like, okay, so that's 6.25 serving. Like it's just the most wackest math ever.
Awesome. Well, I think we answered that question. One question down, 15 minutes. Good.
Yeah.
We're on a roll, guys. Yeah. We're on a great roll. Dylan's like, we're going to answer a ton of questions. We are not answering a ton of questions. I actually like this one that you posted, Braden, in our group. I've been seeing lots about estrogen dominance. What is that? Well, it's kind of crazy. So estrogen dominance, of course, is when you're looking in the female body, you have a liver, right? And your liver is supposed to excrete excess hormones, let's say. And what ends up happening is people like to drink and they like to eat shitty food and they like to do all these things and they like to stress their body out. Well, when that happens, the liver's first thing is not to excrete those hormones. So what you'll typically see is there's a thing called beta glucuronidase. I'm gonna get really scientific here. I'm gonna not keep this in layman terms, as Dylan likes to say. I'm gonna do this more scientific. There's a beta glucuronidase which slows down the excretion of that, and it actually causes things to recycle back into the system. And this recycling typically ends up with excess estrogen in the system, which is why you often see, I mean, you can even see guys have, I mean, you see symptoms of it with low testosterone and higher estrogen all the time with like beer guts and things like that. Like, why do they have that? But estrogen dominance is really just a ratio in all aspects. It's a ratio between estrogen and progesterone. So you have to look at it. I totally forget. I think it's progesterone times 1,000 divided by 100. Maybe? No, that's
not. Are you talking about the ratio?
The ratio? Am I right?
I don't even do it myself anymore.
I really don't even do it. I kind of know at this point whether someone is or not. But what I typically find is actually most people are not estrogen dominant by estrogen. Most people are estrogen dominant by low progesterone.
I agree.
And this is where you'll see, what do we start to see here with Ed with this estrogen dominance? I'm putting this in quotes, is you'll see irregular cycles. You'll see like hair loss or thinning of the hair, heavy PMS symptoms. Like you'll see a bunch of these, and mostly irregular cycles is what you're going to see is the main thing. If people can't get a cycle back, it's usually due to low progesterone. And it's a lot of it is caused from just undue stress that people put on themselves in terms of whether that's cardio, training, or even just overall, they don't know how to manage their own stress in their life. So that's kind of the scientific breakdown of it, is that estrogen usually is not excreted out through the liver, because especially if you're drinking alcohol, the first thing it's going to go to is excreting the alcohol because it's a toxin. Awesome. So it won't excrete. And then you'll have excess estrogen circulating in the system. And that's where you get that ratio, but sometimes it can be regular progesterone. I think there's four things. It can be high estrogen, and I think high progesterone, but like the high is like the ratio would be off. It's like normal estrogen, low progesterone, high estrogen, normal progesterone, and then I think there's, and then
I was
there's
literally
low,
just gonna say that there's
and then there's so low and low problems. And then there's low, which actually, by the way, I've seen. It's actually really funny. I've actually not had a hormonal birth control case where I have seen excess estrogen. If anything, every single one that I've seen so far has been postmenopausal estrogen and postmenopausal progesterone. It's just like there's like a 0.1 progesterone, and then there's like a 25, there's like a 25 estrogen. So it's like technically it's estrogen dominance, but it's not really, it's really the whole system shutting down.
Yeah, you're just absolutely smoked in terms of the hormones, period.
those are they're difficult
fun to fix. It's a task in itself. I guess I could piggyback off that. I was going to mention exactly kind of what you said. There's estrogen dominance is a funny one, because a lot of the times it's actually not estrogen dominance. A lot of times you might see estrogen in a good range. But it's actually the fact that progesterone is in a horrible range. And that ratio, I believe they say it should be like 100 to 500. I like to see it a little higher. But again, it's, if you're within that 100 to 500 range,
you're good.
You're not estrogen dominant on paper, right? And that's, like you said, you're going to have symptoms of, you didn't mention, impaired thyroid function, right? Because it's definitely going to have an impaired thyroid from that, the things you said, like irritability and mood, hair loss potentially, and then even bigger things. And me and Dylan have talked about this one. I won't get too into it because it's an athlete, but I had an athlete who had to have an ovary removed from cancer, basically. And prolonged estrogen dominance can definitely lead to issues with that, estrogenic cancers, right? And that's why it's funny, because I love talking about estrogen dominance, but in the same breath, I don't, because I feel like it's just like the cool thing to talk about right these days. You know what I mean? Like everyone's talking, which is good that everyone's talking about it, because people are realizing how detrimental things like hormonal birth control can be, right? Like it wasn't something that was talked about ever, but now it's almost like it's taken the extreme other way. It was never talked about, and now it's all the only thing that's talked about, right? Which, again, better than not being talked about for sure. But I think there's also, it takes a pretty in-depth understanding to truly understand estrogen dominance and how to fix it and how to deal with it. And I genuinely think there's a lot of people that just might not truly know it, but are speaking to it, if that makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yes.
By that?
Yes, they haven't again, actually they haven't applied it. They haven't applied exactly. They haven't applied the knowledge.
Exactly. And like even my sister, man, my sister, I helped her come off birth control, and she was on birth control for 15 years. And it is not fun at all, right? Like you come off birth control and you're extremely estrogen dominant. The skin issues like acne and all these different things that arise from this is not fun whatsoever. But yeah, I mean, lots of times there's going to be, it comes down to, well, we know how to deal with it, right? You're talking stress management, you're talking supplementation, whether you're supplementing for the liver, like calcium D-glucarate, for the beta-glucuronidase you were talking about, stuff like that. There's so many different things in our society that can be contributing to estrogen dominance. Parabens in skincare stuff. And this is something I know I talked with Austin about, so you probably would have too.
Yeah.
But yeah. Like the water contamination, right? And stuff in our water we're drinking. There's so many things. And it's like, you can go down this rabbit hole of everything I'm doing is creating estrogen dominance. So change.
That's probably why my estrogen. That's probably why my estrogen was high, because I use tap water because I'm a peasant. I should probably actually change that.
Using too much soy sauce.
Yeah, I should probably get a filter.
Yeah, it's a really good question though, because like you said, it's if you actually are defining it, the definition, like you said, would be a multiple of different things. It basically the way I would put it in the most basic way to understand. An imbalance of hormone levels when you're speaking to progesterone and estrogen.
Yes.
Right. And now one can be high, one can be low, one can be low, one can be high, vice versa. Both can be low, both can be high. Both high, I guess, wouldn't necessarily be estrogen dominance, but you understand what I'm saying there. It's not one thing. It presents as a bunch of different things, and understanding how to tackle it at that point becomes based on symptoms and so forth.
Yep.
Well, I'm going to play devil's advocate with this one, just because you guys covered everything that I would have basically said about it. So I'm going to try another angle. Because the reason Braden actually triggered this idea when he said everyone's talking about it, because I kind of had that in my head a little bit too. And one thing we have to remember, I don't like it when, to be honest, like, so first off, in the last 9 months, I've gotten about 15 cycles back. So this is something I feel pretty damn good at now. Secondly, I don't like it when coaches go on social media and just trash birth control. It shows a very low intelligence, to be honest, and IQ and understanding of how the world has actually evolved. Because to a female at one time, that was the greatest gift that's ever been brought forth upon mankind. That changed the way that they get to live their lives on Earth. The jury's out if that's good or not. I have my own thoughts on that, but we'll keep that away from now. But like, it's a very, very powerful. It's a very, very, very powerful thing. It changed the way that women live in society. Okay, so like, it's not just like some thing that you should erase from the history books. We have to be careful. And yes, we're only finding a lot of these problems out now, unfortunately, as are we going to with many pharmaceutical products.
Oh, you know it.
So fair enough. Okay, so there's that. So just remember that it's kind of like saying, oh, we shouldn't have sanitary options for females. It's like, well, hey, whoa, that changed the way that they literally carried themselves, their species carried themselves on Earth. So it's a powerful thing. The second thing is to add to that, to Braden's point to spin off also, I can tell that nobody really knows what's going on with these cases, but because people are talking about it so much, there's so much regurgitation going on, because I can tell when someone, like, I've helped so many of these cases now, and they think there's like a printout that I'm going to give them. Like, here's this printout of like estrogen dominance fixation, and here's these supplements, and here's these things. And it's like, well, that's what so-and-so told me, or that's what I saw on this person's thing. And I'm like, and most of the time I'm like, hey, actually, unless you have a brutal case, which I do have two of those, which are really not, they're eluding me, but I'm going to get them. But for the most part, it's actually very easy. And a lot of like the protocols like that, even I would learn in some of the functional medicine stuff I've done, I can get, for instance, like, you know how you'll hear in our community, like the functional health community more so than the bodybuilding, but like, hey, yeah, right away, if a female's got amenorrhea, she cannot be training. She has to drop down training to like a 1-to-1 work-to-rest ratio or 2-to-1 rest to work, 3 or 4 RR, nonsense. I've gotten a bunch of periods back while recomping, adding metabolic flame, let's say, and tissue all at the same time. Human body is incredibly, incredibly powerful. And I really don't like how on one end we talk about no problems in the bodybuilding community. And then the functional health end, we talk about ourselves like if we walk outside, we're just going to melt down to some molecules like the sun. Or, you know, it's like, man, there's a room for happy medium in here. We have to remember that our physiology is very powerful. It wants to adapt. So if you support it to do the proper things, like the reason most people are in the situation they are is because they've created a long-term adaptation through poor dietary and or lifestyle choices or whatever it may be, a combination of many things usually. But to adapt out is a similar type of process. You just start making better adaptations for your body to follow along, and things usually can go pretty well for most cases.
To piggyback on that too, right? Like, I agree with you completely, and I'm not going to sit here and say a lot of the time that I don't implement 3RIR training and stuff like that, because absolutely there's quite a few times where I will. But again, it comes back to the individual and the symptoms, because
that was my point, Brady.
Yeah, exactly. Because quite frankly, if you have an individual who is, you know, a very low stress individual, but previously there was things happening like a stressful situation, like over dieting or chronic over dieting that caused this adaptation you're speaking to, it wasn't necessarily a stressor in the gym potentially that caused this. Right? Like there was some sort of stressor at some point in time or some adaptation formed because of something. So if you just say it's the training that's causing the stress, well, if you have a very good sleep routine, you're not a high strung person, you don't have a high stress job, and your life is actually, you're good at managing your stress, well, you probably can afford a little bit of stress here and there and still get your period back. Right. And that's just a fact. And that's what I think you're speaking to, Dylan, is you don't just need to every single time say training's gone. But again, as coaches, we work with individuals over the long term. We know how people are. So if I've been working with you for 8 months and you still don't have your cycle back or whatever, or you'd lost your cycle because of something, and I know you're a high stress person, well, telling you not to stress, good luck. But me telling you to cut your volume in half or your frequency in half and pull your training to 3-4 reps in reserve, now I know that I'm pulling back on your stress because I know that your lifestyle is not necessarily going to allow you to, because you run multiple businesses, you're not keen on the idea of journaling before bed and this and that, right? So there's certain things that I can do and I can implement that are going to force you out of that stressful state, right? So again, it comes back to the person. And I agree 100% with what you said, Dylan. Absolutely.
And to add another word too, I think it could, like you said, kind of the route you have to take is very different. Like I have multiple clients now, and most people want to think like these protocols are like wizardry, right? Like they're so magical. Like I was talking with Dylan, and I think I said it on the last podcast, you know, I was talking with Austin. We're trying to figure out a few of these things, right? And people's progesterone levels are still, they're still getting cycles, but they're still like 0.1, like they're 0.2, like they're still not coming up. And it's like, okay, what do you do here? Well, we tried Chase Berry. Okay. We tried Progon B. Where do you go from there? Where you go, like now we're on progesterone cream, like in terms of just like that, like people haven't been there in terms of those cases too, either. Like people haven't seen those. Like so many people want to just shout out, hey, take Chase Berry. You'll be fine. Like for some people, that's great. It absolutely works. I've seen it work in my own clients. Like I've seen it happen, but I also have a few where if you're so downregulated that everything's postmenopausal coming off birth control, and I'm not demonizing birth control here. I'm using it as an example because that's what I've dealt with personally doing these. You have to take that training back and you're going to have to implement even more things. And if birth control, you were on it for a long period of time, I always tell people I never guarantee your cycle is going to come back. There's no, if you've been on it for 10 plus years, there is no guarantee that comes back, especially if you're in your 30s too. Yeah. Like if you're starting to reach that 35 year range, like I do give that option where I'm just like, hey, I can't guarantee things at this moment, But I even have, a female that's 25 and was postmenopausal everything just from her own self. And yep. It's like crazy what we have to do. Like a lot of these people are down, right? She's training. I took away her training just in general, just because I need to just like take stress down in terms of things. But I don't think people understand how hard these cases are actually to work. And you have to work multiple different angles at multiple different times.
Because and I think, person, go ahead.
Because a person can only handle so much, right?
Yeah.
In terms of what they have, whether that is the training or whether that is their mental state, right? Like you have to think about the person's mental state too when you get to these things. Like in term, like that's where Dylan, I think where Dylan found that middle ground where he can still train people hard. So they love the training and they can eat the good amount of food. Like some people can't do that, but for how long can they not do that without losing their minds, right? That's the thing where you have to coach that athlete to understand what you're doing here and that it's not going to be a permanent thing. Because I think everyone thinks, oh, I got to train this way for like forever. Or when they're doing a gut protocol, like I can't eat these food, like I can't eat gluten like forever. Like a lot of people want to say like things, like they try to put forever on things. But like I'm saying, some of these cases are just really difficult and they do take time. And these things take time to heal. And I don't think people understand how long, because I'm working on cases where progesterone has been 0.1 for a year. And I have one of the best mentors in the game helping me through these cases too, who has been through these multiple times. And he's like, sometimes it's like this. And I didn't know how that would be, right? This is one of my first cases. I didn't know how long it would take until you're actually in the trenches working with these people. You really can't put a timeline on each specific person because you're coaching that person.
100%. And I think something you touched on there, that's really important. And I think personally, like one of the most important things when even estrogen dominance is part of a conversation is the word time. You are going to need time. And I, a lot of times I'll use the reference in speaking to body fat levels. You did not put on 25 pounds of body fat in 3 weeks. You did not become estrogen dominant in 1 month. Don't expect it to be fixed in 1 month. And there will be the odd time where you will bring back a period or you will fix it very quick. A random person who is very, very responsive and their body is resilient as hell, and they might get it back quick. But 99% of the time that ain't the case. So you're going to need time. And I feel like that is the hardest part for the athlete to understand, is when you tell someone, hey, I can't give you a timeline on this. Like you feel like shit right now, and we're going to be slowly working to get you away from feeling like shit, but you are still going to feel like shit probably for a little while. Like as a coach, it's not fun telling somebody
no.
that, but being on the receiving end of that, I mean, I've never had to get a period back myself. So I've never had to been told that, but there's been other things, right, that kind of can correlate. And it sucks to hear, for sure. It's no different than, like, hypothetically, and if we go back to the birth control thing, and again, not to demonize it, but if you put a 14-year-old boy on TRT, well, what do you expect is going to happen potentially 15 years later when you take him off of TRT and try to get his hormones back? You know what I mean? Like, there is a large risk that he may have to be on TRT for the rest of his life. But to Dylan's point, and this, I just want to touch on the birth control being demonized again. Let's look at it this way. A lot of us, and I'm definitely guilty of demonizing birth control in a way, because I do think there has been an over influx of usage with it.
Yes.
But again, there is also situations where that was the right play. You know what I mean? But
yes.
I look at it like this. How can I demonize the use of birth control when I'm a bodybuilding coach and I'm writing PED cycles for people that are going to have the same effect on a 30-year-old male when he is done blasting these protocols or done using hormones, right? Like there's a very, very high chance that male or that female may need to be on HRT for the rest of their life. And birth control is a very similar thing, that it's a roll of the dice. And a lot of times you can do things to get it back. And like you said, there may be situations where somebody just might not be able to, and they might need some sort of HRT. Where is it ultimately that much different, right? It's Yeah, it's just a funny way to look at it, but it's realistically the same thing, right? Like if you compare birth control to putting a 14-year-old girl on birth control, it's a lot of very similar to putting a 14-year-old boy on TRT. Yep. But at the same time, if you're demonizing that, well, as grown men coaching other grown men and women in a bodybuilding world, we're essentially also putting hormones in people, and the end result is going to be the same thing if you just take them off those hormones, a completely fucked up hormone panel, right? So there's both sides of the coin, and I think that's just where, as coaches, we need to look at it with an open mind, and you can't have those blanket statements to say all birth control is bad. Yeah, because there are people, like you said, Dylan, who have had their lives changed for the better,
yes,
over the long term by implementing it because they needed it for a reason.
Yep, exactly. Yep.
So
you gotta, if you're gonna play the card of you don't understand or you don't like birth control, you have to be willing to educate the other side of that along with it. I think that's very
demonizing. I feel like I just genuinely, and this is maybe going on a side tangent now, but I feel like demonizing some shit in general is just not a good idea, because it's, even in the bodybuilding world, you get these people that preach, well, my clients don't do cardio. Cardio is stressful. Oh. Listen, dude, like you need to get to 4% body fat, and some people are going to need 1,000 calories of cardio to do that. If it takes you 2 hours of cardio to get to 4% body fat, then get your ass out there and do 2 hours of cardio to get to 4% body fat. You just better have a plan to reverse that, right? And that's the main idea.
That's like the plan.
If you're demonizing cardio usage and low food in a contest prep, that is the definition of bodybuilding. Essentially, you have to starve your body to get that lean. I don't care who you are, but starving for one person looks different than starving for another person. Somebody can be starving on 3,000 calories and be inside out, while somebody needs to starve on 1,000 calories to be peeled. Right?
Bingo. You know, but if you take the birth control thing one step further, it's like, yes, it might have helped someone individually because of just the use of the tool. But like, never mind, how about since like whatever 1960, women being able to have a lot more control over their reproductive system, you know, like what it's like, yeah. Oh, well, what did we have before? Trusting men. How's that go for you? We're all men. This doesn't go very good. It's not a good plan. If you want to talk about bad plans, it's not a good plan.
All right, let's go. I think we saw that question. That one's done. Braden, let's get you one.
All right, let's see what there was another one here that was that I kind of liked.
I want you to answer the one about the insulin and the L-car, because I want to hear what you have to say.
Also. Okay. So are we that one? I actually had a. So my question on that, are we talking about the application of L-carnitine and having to use insulin? Are we speaking to are we speaking to how L-carnitine will impact insulin in the body?
No, I think it's because like the use of those two tools,
use
of the
both.
Benefits of them separately, but you can answer them like individually. I don't think it means.
So I think they want to know.
He's curious about like, I want to use insulin and I want to use L-car. What should I use this one? Yeah.
Okay. Well,
Dylan's a big fan of insulin. So Dylan's going to be curious because there's me so many insulin questions.
I'm a huge fan of insulin too, man, I've mentioned this to Dylan before, but again, and Dylan and I just had a conversation just the other day about this, and I have, my mind goes in a million different ways with insulin right now.
Me too.
I don't stay with me. I think when I talk about insulin, like, is it directly a performance enhancing drug itself? Like if I just took insulin, am I improving my performance? No, but if I take 10 units of Humalog and I drive in an extra 100 grams of carbs or 120 grams of carbs, and that is being driven into the muscle, is that going to impact my performance?
Yeah.
You're damn right that's going to impact my performance. Right? Now, again, and again, I'm pleased for anyone that's listening to this, don't just grab a 10 units of Humalog and throw it in you. And like,
yeah, we are not, like, we always fail to give out a warning prior to these episodes. We are not doctors. We are not medical professionals. We cannot be held liable for anything that is said during exactly this part of the podcast. Don't listen to us. This is for
entertainment
and our purposes only.
So again, so to continue on with the insulin thing, my preferred use of insulin is going to be from a health standpoint. Now, your pancreas can only basically support you so much, right? And if you have a large bodybuilder in a growth phase, or anyone in a growth phase, potentially in their an enhanced athlete, and they're using drugs or whatever, there's going to be a point where blood glucose may trend up. We know that insulin resistance has a cascading effect on inflammation in the body, long-term disease risk, all of these things, right? So what is causing that? It's an inability of the body to produce enough insulin to manage your blood sugars, right? So now, what if we lessen the load on the pancreas? What if we give your body enough of a break where you are still going to produce insulin, but you're going to supply enough insulin exogenously that you're giving the pancreas a bit of a break, and now you're seeing your blood glucose and you're seeing these things trend in the right direction. You're going to feel better. You're not going to be tired all the time, right? Circulating blood sugars, et cetera, like, again, cascading of events here. But if we utilize insulin, whether you're talking a basal, and this is what Dylan and I chatted about the other day, whether you're using a basal, whether you're using Humalog, whether you're using a combination approach, it's going to have an effect that will improve your health.
Yep.
Now, there's a caveat there. If you improperly use insulin, you can completely fuck yourself up. Yep. And you can hurt yourself. And I feel like there's the majority of people that don't actually understand how to apply insulin. And I'm not going to sit here and say I'm an insulin god either. But I think safe practice is very, very important. And this is something I talked with you about the other day, Dylan, is actually monitoring, right? So if you are using insulin, no matter what, and I will take this to my grave, you better be monitoring your blood glucose. You absolutely better be monitoring your blood glucose. You better not be throwing a dart at the wall and hoping it sticks with that.
No.
You better be monitoring your blood glucose. And I'm talking fasted levels, postprandial levels, especially around application, mm-hmm. right? Because, hey, we've all felt, maybe if you've never used insulin, you haven't felt it. But if you've gone hypo,
I've gone hypo though. Okay.
Yeah, but I feel like going hypo and going hypo with the use of insulin,
two different things.
With the use of insulin is two different things. And like, I'm talking, you get numb lips and you're like fucking shaking and freezing and sweating at the same time. And
I've had all those happen.
In the back of your mind, you're telling yourself, "Am I about to die?" And then you're reaching for anything around you, right? And like we need to understand, if you're applying safely, that probably will not happen. You may go hypo, and that's where you understand what you're doing. Okay, listen, let's look at the situation we're in. You're in a dieting phase. We've been pulling back your food, and all of a sudden your blood glucose is trending lower, but you just messaged me and you've gotten to the point where you went hypo. Well, you're now 12 pounds lighter than you were when we were using that insulin dosage to start. Mm-hmm. Your carbs are lower than they were then. You are becoming naturally more insulin sensitive. So let's pull back your insulin dosage, right? You're not going to suddenly make a carb pull and insulin's going to be again at a safe level. And all of a sudden you're just going to hit the floor and die. Like, if you are practicing properly, you're going to be able to see trends and you're going to be able to feel the lows, and you're monitoring your blood glucose and see the lows. And that's where the feedback becomes very important. When an athlete fills out their feedback questionnaire and you see, okay, well, blood glucose is like low fours, high threes here. Again, this is Canadian measurement system.
it's like 70. It's like seven. That'd be like 70s type.
Yeah. And like, once you get, like you said, everybody also has a different place where they're going to be hypo.
Yes.
Right. Everybody has a place where their body is going to want to stay. Like, it's really nice to say, I want everybody at a 4.6, 4.5. There's people that are their body's just going to want to hang at a 4.9, 5.0. And we can do things to bias that for sure. But again, kind of like very similar, I feel like, to a body fat set point. A body is going to want to hang out at an area. That's what your body, it's very, very good at adapting, but it likes to go back all the time to where it is comfortable, right? So, yeah, in terms of I don't even know where I was going with this now. Just talking about
insulin. We're just talking about why we love insulin. It's fine.
Yeah. So, I mean, insulin, like I said, insulin is great. Now, going to the conversation that Dylan and I had the other day, and another form of usage is like applying a Humalog with every meal, right? And monitoring postprandial levels versus using a basal in the morning. There's going to be benefit and downfall to each. Obviously, I personally, I know there's people that demonize, again, we'll use that word, basal insulins. I don't mind them, man. I definitely don't mind them at all because risk is quite low.
Yeah.
Right? Like there's a very low risk. And sometimes some athletes, you just might be kind of like, oof, I don't know if this is somebody who we directly can hammer some Humalog in with. So if we use some, and I'm trying to tread lightly the way I say that, I can see Dylan smiling a little bit. But I think, yeah. So it's in a situation like that, I might say, all right, let's put in 20 units or I shouldn't even use numbers here because I don't want people to just go do that. But
what let's say, put X in amount of units, X amount,
X amount of units of a basal insulin like Lantus in the morning or in the evening, whichever, right? And then you're going to track trends. Now, if we're talking, okay, around the training window, maybe we're using some growth hormone. We want a little bit of IGF-1 boost. We're going to have a lot of carbs pre-training, a big old meal pre-training. Yeah, I mean, you can definitely hit yourself with a nice dose of growth hormone, a nice dose of insulin, and the performance effects are going to be huge, right? So that's one of the things with insulin that I think is extremely beneficial is the synergistic effects it has with other things, right? Like even when you look at growth hormone on a very basic level, it in itself is not an anabolic, right? Like it's not going to promote anabolism, but synergistically with other things and everything in play, you can absolutely promote anabolism with that shit. Okay. And I would argue that like if you take test GH and insulin and you know what you're doing, you can have a damn good physique.
Yeah. I think this is funny because I think Dylan messaged me directly after talking with you because we had this same conversation about a few days ago.
I can tell you why actually. So because when it was my turn, I was going to tell you guys I play. So like I've had these three or four cases where I'm like, and now I've gotten the hypothesis and the conclusion, because the fun thing about this conversation compared to when I talked to you guys midweek is that it was check-in days in the last 2 days. So I got to see, and I was just like checking to see if I was crazy. I wanted to ask like two or three people that I trusted, because I was like, geez, this is not done very often. But I noticed with some of my older guys that are wanting to do enhancements and or wanting to, that are pretty big and strong, and I have quite a few of those guys that are of 30 plus, but even a couple guys 40 plus, that I think the pancreas is just a little bit more tired, and a lot of them have been training for like quite a long time. So you've been hammering carbohydrates higher than what someone normally would, let's say just everyday lifestyle, for a lot of years, like compounding. We know that the body adapts over a very long period of time. And no matter what I did, meal timing, carb cycling, like trying all the plays, the BGs were just still like 100 plus, like fasted, you know, like 5.2, 5.6, lots of that. But they were progressing, looking good, resting heart rates were good, blood pressures were good. It's just like Braden said, you know, like sometimes it's like that's kind of where they wanted to hang out. They're not over fat. They had abs, for God's sakes. And it was like, holy man, okay. So I wanted to try using insulin like a health tool, because I think what happens a lot of the times is people dose their food to their insulin, not their insulin to their food.
100%. So I'm not really that's why I was explaining to you. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm not.
What do you mean? What do you mean, man? You're just supposed to have one unit of insulin for every 10 grams of carbs, bro.
Yeah, so it's like instead of trying to upregulate what your body, and I think that the volume dial, as Braden said, is individual. That's different for different people. But these guys are not national level competitors and stuff, but they want to play a little bit. Okay, fine, let's play. So you turn the volume dial up a little bit. And I think, well, I'm not trying to get them to eat another 300 carbs on top of what their body could normally process. I'm going to try to get them to eat another 20 or 30 around their training on both ends of it, maybe 15, whatever it is. And then throughout the day, I'm going to keep their BG hovering around that 80 to 5. I'm just going to keep it hovering there as best as I can. And these are people that also eat the same foods every day and stuff. So the variables, this isn't not for everyone, you know, like things have to be very monotonous for this. And my reason for not choosing a long acting, which would be less injection frequency, which is a good thing, I guess, you know, that's a con of doing it the way I'm doing it. But one of the pros is I think you get a lot less cortisol and aldosterone. And a lot of these males that train hard, their cortisol is already high. So I don't know if I want to be pushing that necessarily any more than I have to, because it's gone from your system. You're not getting like systemic cortisol, slow rise throughout the day from having that elevated insulin in your system. And I coach people that are not like, we're in Saskatchewan, you know, like in Braden's in Alberta, he can probably attest to this too. Like I have these blue collar guys that are like working in an iron metal processing facility. It's like, yeah, but a lot of times, like for me, if Braden put me in a long acting, I probably would fall down the stairs because sometimes I get so busy, I don't eat, you know, in my check-in, I'm like, hey, these 5 days I crushed it. These 2 days I could only get 3 meals a day. I crammed my calories and sorry. But like my main job isn't eating. My main job is being a coach on Team Miller and doing other things. And sometimes my own eating comes last. So I'm scared that like I give some semi driver, you know, like driving a haul of metal down the highway and, you know, he's got this insulin floating around in his system. Like, oh, I forgot my meal there. And then now it's like, well, that's hospitalization potentially. Of course it's low risk, but you know, like, and this happens like quite a bit. So at least with Humalog, it's in and out. So if they dose it right and I've done my homework, it's even lower risk to me. So that's why I do it. And getting these, all of a sudden, 3 check-ins today, 2 females and 2 males. As soon, you know how you like on your WhatsApp, you can see the small pictures before you like open them.
Yeah.
I got so happy with all 4 of them. Like I was like, oh my God, midsections. Look at these midsections. And like, holy Christ. Like I almost couldn't believe it. And just from 2 weeks of bringing down systemic inflammation, all of them got leaner visibly, which is really interesting. And this is kind of like outside of, this is one of these darts that I'm figuring out how to throw.
It's a dart. It's a dart though that you had to tread lightly, like we said. This is
really lightly.
This is one where you also pick people that are
I picked 5 people that literally eat the same food every day and would check their blood sugar for me fasted in the morning, postprandial every day for 14 days straight and eat the same exact things. No cheat meals, same water amount, train hard as fuck. Like all the variables are there right down to the same pre-workout, you know? So it's like, I wouldn't do that with someone who's like, if it's fitting your macros. Because even people forget, insulin at X dose with eating like fruits and rice products, like most bodybuilders do, let's say, or rice and, you know, some maybe higher glycemic load carb, but not much. All of a sudden, the same person eating a bunch of beans and vegetables and things, well, that changes how your blood glucose regulates, even on the same calories.
Yeah.
So that would change how the insulin drastically affects you, you know? So the variables have to be kept in place.
I really have nothing to add here.
Yeah, that's good.
I don't have any personal application in terms of it or what I've done with any clients, so I don't feel like I'm more inclined to actually talk about it.
I got one thing to add, and this was something actually me and Dylan that I mentioned when Dylan and I spoke about this the other day, and it goes on to what he's talking about where when he said there's a truck driver and he just wasn't able to get a meal in. There's also like when I'm speaking to situations where I personally will use insulin with somebody, whether it's a basal or timed Humalog application, basically after meals, before meals, whatever. Not everyone also has the ability to carry around carry around a fanny pack.
Yeah, with a Humalog pen.
Yeah, the old what's RX muscle?
Palumbo?
Dave Palumbo walk around with a fanny pack loaded with syringes and whatnot all day, every day back in the 70s. You know what I mean? Like a lot of people don't have the ability to do that. So you're trying to apply Humalog 4, 5, 6 times a day potentially.
Yep.
And it's just, it's not that easy to do, right? Especially because, well, essentially you're going to want to keep your insulin probably refrigerated. And there's a lot of things where you just, it becomes a little more taxing on the person, you know what I mean? Like now you're expected to do a lot. Yep. You're expected to monitor your blood glucose more frequently. Whereas if you're one of those people that can't do that, well, why can't we give you a basal and watch? Yes, it's going to be different, but yes, it's going to also be the same in the sense that we're going to see an improvement in your blood glucose levels.
Yes.
Yeah. And I agree with all of that.
I'm at least application wise, like working through things and how I would work with things with like Austin, I would gladly be more of a just safer route, like go using fast acting more so around the peri-workout window and just kind of doing it with Dylan said, kind of just adding just a slight bit more, like if we need to push like those 30 grams more carbs. But like I said, like I talked with Dylan about this the other day and I bet you probably referenced the same thing. I was like, you got to read trends first before you even add it in. And then just add a small little amount at a time. There's no reason. So many people like to push a huge dose of insulin, like right away too. That's the one mistake I also see with a lot of people is they like to do like 20 IUs like right away. What's the need for that dosage? Like, why can't you do like 3? Like, why can't you do like 2 to 3 IUs or even 5?
So like, by the way, when I'm doing these things that I just kind of described, like throughout the day, I don't have one person, even the biggest guy on that much, not actually quite far from it, to be honest, pretty far from it. And I also want to add this, because this is important as to why, because I want to make sure my thought process is recognized. So the people that I chose to do this, one of them is going to be doing their second exposure as an older man. So I took the older male approach because it's another, I don't want him using a bunch of androgens because
that's also a good thing.
Just because, I mean, it's self-explanatory. He's older, you know, so like 45 plus. So, and I'm also not going to convince him not to do it. So I know he's going to do it. I'm going to do it safely with him, or safely as we can, let's say. So I like to use a variety of tools. So that case had that ideology. And the rest of the people that I'm doing this with are all wanting a first exposure. And I told them, hey, I would rather use something bioidentical. It gives you a feel for like how much pain in the ass injecting yourself actually is. And I can actually make you healthier with this product, I think, with the way I'm using it. And and if you can't dose this product in the way that I want, then I don't want to give you a first exposure protocol, because you're not, that'll tell me that you're probably not responsible enough to manage that, because that gets more complicated if anything, right? So it's I'm using it as like here's an option to increase your performance and your health, but it's not quite, especially for females, because this is a pile of females too in here. Mm-hmm. And it's like, hey, before I give you an androgen that's literally going to cascade an effect of psychophysiology, want to ensure, you know, so that's kind of why I'll use things like L-carnitine or injectable glutathione or insulin to try and leverage health markers so that physique improvements come much faster than what they're used to through super supplementation. And I air quoted that with my fingers. But yet, if I stop all those things today, their body will just immediately return to functioning the way that it was.
Yeah.
Versus you start playing with other things, you cross the bridge. Now you don't just get to turn around. It's bombed. You got to find another way around.
Yeah, 100%. And that's, I like the how you dove into the female aspect on that. That is one of the, like, realistically, it's a very good first exposure for a female wanting to go. Now, again, I mean, there's myself, I'll work with a new athlete who's a female that's used PEDs in the past. And you ask 99% of females what their first exposure was, I bet you both you guys could say the same thing I'm going to say right now. Welcome in Anavar. You know what I mean? And it's like, I could go on a tangent with that too, but
yeah, me too.
It's, yeah.
Definitely better roots in terms of.
It's, and that's not to say there's no application for it. Right. But again, that's a whole different side conversation. But I personally think small doses of insulin in a female can be very powerful.
Very, yes.
For physique enhancement, very, very powerful. And it's not, you got to be careful even saying that though, because who's listening, who's going to just start drilling girls with insulin, right? Like it's,
I hope to God you understand physiology before you start playing with anything we talk about. Cause the thing is, Brayden, is we talk about all kinds of shit that we don't want people, I don't want people taking my supplement advice and just, you know, like, oh, he, like we talked about with the team, we were talking about a product that had DHEA in it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, well, because someone reads like, oh, DHEA deficiency can do these things. And then they're like, oh, I have those things. You better give me that. It's like, you better know that that's what that's for. And that's exactly what you need, because otherwise it's going to cause you a bigger problem.
I say that all the time with DHEA supplementation. I'm like, dude, that's a last resort when it comes down.
Speaking to the DHEA supplementation thing, if you don't generally understand what's in a product, but you just see, oh, DHEA will increase conversion to testosterone, so I'm going to have a higher level of testosterone.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, I'm going to take women's health formula as a test booster. I'm going to start using women's health formula as a test booster. So it has DHEA in it. You know what I mean? And it's just like, you need to truly understand, like read a label and understand what you're putting in your body.
And then watch your estrogen.
Is there situations where that is a very, very good product to use? Probably. Absolutely. 100%. Now, is it everyone should be using it?
Nope.
No, because, well, here's the thing. What's in a product like the one we were talking about? DIM. Like, right, there's a bunch of other things you could just extrapolate and individually dose and control the actual amount you're providing based on the feedback you're getting.
There's a purpose for every supplement that we use, and there's a reason why 100%. We do it. And I think that's where you need to have a coach that does know what they're adding in. You can't just say, oh, this woman is fighting this. We just need to add in a women's health formula. Like that's not gonna, there's a purpose for why we add things in and why we choose specific brands for why we add things in, because we can, like Brayden said, we can control it. Do we have time for one more, boys?
Yeah, I want Brayden to answer the L-carnitine.
Oh, the L-carnitine.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So yeah,
I'll sit back and relax here.
I won't go too in depth, like scientifically wise and whatnot here. It's a fascinating drug that I'm still studying all the time because I love it. But yes, applying L-carnitine is a very, 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 I would recommend it. Whether you are in a growth phase, whether you are in a diet phase, whatever it is, it's going to have positive effects. Like there's a plethora of different positive effects. Obviously, it'll have, and I'm not going to be able to name every single one off the top of my head. There's so many, right? But like ones you can speak to is going to be the ammonia recycling, right? Like as bodybuilders, what do? We eat a lot of protein. When we are breaking down muscle and all this stuff and metabolizing amino acids, what do we get? Ammonia, right? So if you can utilize L-carnitine and it's going to drive the ammonia recycling process harder, well, now, like you said, you're essentially going to be healthier, right? And it's very beneficial in that regard. Other things, obviously, fat metabolism, that's what 90% of people are using L-carnitine for. Now, again, I think it goes to the place where it became very gimmicky, where people were just putting it in fat burners here and there, this and that, and like understanding the amount you're actually getting and utilizing from a dose that you're taking orally, you aren't getting anything done from that. And you better be super physiologically dosing it. And I recommend using Alcar and hammering it with insulin. So not exogenous insulin. You can obviously use exogenous insulin, but having it with a very high carbohydrate meal, right? Like that's, and I feel like it's also kind of, I don't want to sound too basic to talk about it, but that's the truth behind it, right? Like if you are going to use L-carnitine, I am going to say use injectable.
Yep.
Like use injectable carnitine, get it into the muscle, drive it into the muscle, and then take it with a high carbohydrate meal or a little bit of exogenous insulin and watch what happens. I guarantee you.
Post-workout, pre-workout, baby. You want to get a good pump? Take all carn, insulin, and a lot of carbs. And you're good. Well, and like,
Braden, do you administer IM or sub Q?
I've done both. I mean, it's water-based, right? So you absolutely can do both. Usually I'm going IM personally. How about yourself?
I do it sub Q, but I hate pinning IM, to be quite honest. Like my dose is going to have to get high to get doing IM.
You and me both, but.
Well, Justin just wrecked me with IM with his damn fucking 3 mil shots. My glutes boosted up. I'm like all wore out from it. You know, a long first exposure of IMing as someone who didn't. Anyway, I didn't know as much then, but I like it sub Q better. I don't know. It just seems to not bother me as much, and the pain. Jesus, it's painful in the muscle.
Oh, it is. It is 100%. It's painful, but
good pumps though. I like it a lot. Really good pumps.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I find too, like if you're pinning IM, I like pinning the muscle group you're training that day. I find like the pumps are disgusting, like you said, and it's just like painful, right? And if we're talking about other things that the benefits it's going to have, we already just talked about of insulin and so forth, but there's going to be a ton of interactions with glucose metabolism and insulin sensitivity as a whole from utilization of L-carnitine, right? So again, there's a really, really high quality application and reason to apply it. Interactions with androgen receptors, it's going to have very, very high affinity to help basically the androgens bind to receptor sites. So there's so many different things that it can do. The list is huge, man.
What do you like for a dose range?
It's really...
And I hate to ask you that question, but I'm genuinely curious, especially the product like L-Car, just because it's pretty safe. But like now you can get like 600 mgs per mil, which it's not so bad, right? But like back in the day, you could only find like 100 or 200 mgs per mil.
Expensive. That's when it was like expensive.
Yeah.
It depends what you're looking for, right? Are you looking for a very acute, sharp interaction at a point in time? Well, let's go a gram.
Realistically,
and like you could, I'm not going to sit here and say that I would not tell somebody to do 2 grams.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I genuinely mean that if you got a big individual and you're looking for a very acute response, drive in a gram, drive in 2 grams. But I'm usually going to start for sure. Like if I'm in a fat loss phase or a
200 milligrams or something,
and I introduce it, I'm going to start about 200 milligrams probably. Yeah. Sometimes again, depending on the size of the individual, I might start at 4. It really is going to be dependent, but I surely ain't starting at a gram. You know what I mean?
No, that's not what I was. Yeah. I have a really nice, I have a L-carb blend with, choline.
Yeah.
Wow. That's nice. It's really nice.
It's Amino Asylum.
No, I actually got this one from.
Don't give away the source. Don't give away the source. For one good soon.
Oh, I don't care. I can't remember the name. I'll ask you later. I have an order coming from Amino Asylum. I actually tried a couple of their, I want to try like one of their pump blends and stuff, and I ordered some glutathione. So I got quite a bit of stuff on the go, but it's taken forever. It's been like 3 months and just barely not even seen it yet.
Yeah. I have no experience with this one either. So do not come to me for advice. I've never administered it. I look forward to administering it in an individual. So I will need to pick your lovely brains about using it. Sure. I don't know enough about it to actually say anything, but I know it's a great thing from everybody that I've heard. Pretty good, really stupid good. Pumps. So,
well, and like one of the coolest things, and especially right, if you apply it during, I wouldn't even say, I feel like this is something that it goes back to a conversation Dylan and I were having earlier this morning, how you know so much and you learn so much. And then sometimes there's just so many things you can apply here and there. And then you start talking about something like this right now, and you're like, you know what? I definitely don't apply that as much as I should, but I know that it works, right? So like even me mentioning the overall, like the interactions with androgen receptors and so forth, like when somebody is on a growth cycle and they are in a prolonged period of exposure to PEDs and their food is high, and like implementing something like injectable L-carnitine is unbelievably awesome. Because like I just said, it is going to make the drugs they're taking better by, it's going to help the drug to find and drive to the androgen receptors. It's going to improve glucose, or I guess insulin sensitivity, glucose uptake, right? So there's so many things, and that's one of the things, like a lot of times I'll have somebody in a growth phase and I may not have applied it, but I also may apply it. It's just one of those things, but it is a phenomenal drug. Pardon me. And again, I don't think there's no usage for Alcar either. I mean, some people just aren't willing to go the injectable route, right? And I think you can still utilize Alcar. You just got to dose it. You can't compare dosing of Alcar to injectable, right? Like you can't be taking the same dosage, like 200 milligrams of Alcar. No. You know what,
you know what I mean? Nothing, like, from that.
Nothing, yeah, like you better be going like, well, I don't even know, like 1.5 grams, like... It's going to be high.
You have to go a lot.
It's going to be high, and then it's going to be absolutely essential that you are driving in a lot of carbohydrates with that application of the Alcar. So, yeah, to touch on that, I love that drug.
I think this episode has been – we might need to do a part two.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can definitely do a part two.
We answered probably about, what did we answer, three questions? I would say that's productive for us. That's a good one. When you get three coaches, this is what happens, guys.
How deep are we anyways? How long has it been?
Oh God, I think we started recording at like 2 hours
then?
Not 2 hours. It may have been like an hour and a half.
Oh yeah, well that's probably our
reach. Like a limit. That's like a limit.
We're just losing people at this point. They're like, all right.
Yeah, they're like, are they going to get to the point? Are they going to tell me the pros and the cons? Because they didn't really say it. And I'm like, the pros, everything is great. No. No, I think this was a great episode. But we'll probably have to come on.
I have one question for you guys on that. You just mentioned pros and cons.
Oh, no.
Do you have any cons to using L-carnitine?
Besides the injection pain.
Yeah, like besides the risk of injection, you know, like it's like you could always get an infection if you're not clean or something from the infection or the injection itself. But like once the product's administered, if it's a quality product, you know, I think it's got brain health benefits, like mitochondrial benefits.
It's huge.
It's kind of like metformin in a way where it's not really, there's no real kind of negative to it.
Well, there's not a crazy amount of drugs that are protocols or supplements, whatever you want to call it, that are going to be healthy and performance enhancing. Yeah. Right? And you look at L-carnitine and it's like best of both worlds.
Yeah.
Positive effects on the heart, brain, you name it. Right. Like there's just so many different things that I could go for days. And I was asking that question because there's not a single one I can think of other than, like you said, frequent injections, because obviously you're not pinning it once a week and having a long half-life, like you're pinning it daily, right? So the frequent injections and injection fatigue, I like to call it, that kind of stuff. But that would literally be the only downfall for it. But I think the pros
very much outweigh that.
I'll take injection fatigue any day to get the benefits of
L-carnitine. Dude, I just want a good delt pump. That's it. He's like, I'll do anything for
it. I can truthfully say that I haven't touched it in probably a year, and I'm not 100% sure why, but it's something I'll probably order up tonight and put it back in.
Can you ask your friend where my order is too when you talk to him?
This is why he asked us this question, because he wanted to proceed saying, oh, I kind of want to implement this, and you guys are kind of giving me a really good reason. There's no negative. Like you're giving me really
I actually, so what I did was I messaged whoever asked you that and said, hey, make sure you ask this so I can start applying L-carnitine and remind
you. Literally. That's pretty funny. You know where else there's a big dose of L-carnitine, Anthony?
Raw meat? Where?
I don't want to hear fucking raw liver. If you say raw liver.
No, it's in the heart, bro, not in the liver.
God, thank God it's not in the
heart. That's why I eat heart, too.
Jesus.
So where all the taurine and the carnitine is.
You and the raw meats. You and these goddamn raw organs.
I don't eat heart raw. Just liver. Don't eat heart raw. You could, but I'm not going to.
You're not
going to
be like the guy from like Indiana Jones where he like eats the guy's heart like right there in the person. You're not going to be that type of guy.
When I was like 11 years old and I shot my first moose, my dad cut it open, pulled the liver and the heart out and said, take a fucking bite, boy. Put it right in your mouth. 100%. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Okay.
He's more of a hard. He's more of a hard ass than I thought. Fuck. Yeah. I take back my words.
Oh yeah, that's like a real thing, man. That's generational for me.
This is a hardened man we are speaking with.
Really, really.
Hardened. I just started slow. Working with. I just started ordering my meals through a meal prep company. So when they put bison heart on the menu, I'll definitely add that in. But until then,
that a boy. Hey, did that? Was that really beneficial? I have a company that is wanting to work like through the stores and.
Yeah.
He was like, I'll do yours too. And honestly, I'm gonna have to give him heart and liver to put in those meats. But
that's what I was kind of going at. They don't
time wise, man. Like that's exactly
why I'm doing it, man. Like, you know my schedule, I know your schedule. Yeah. Like it's really just go. And being that I'm at home all day, every day.
Just go in the fridge and just like pop it in.
That's exactly put it good. In the microwave, man. Like, I mean, yeah. I probably will heat it up in a pan just because I'm bougie like that, but it'll take me 2 seconds versus, you know what I mean? I feel like half the time I'm going to cook a chicken breast and then all of a sudden my meal takes me an hour to eat because I've cooked it and then I'm eating it. And now it's an hour of my day gone versus like,
that's kind of where I'm at.
I cook every single meal, every single day. I don't like to cook my chicken ahead of time. I like to cook it right then and there. I like to have it done.
It's funny though, man. It's funny because when I was competing and still bodybuilding myself, I was in university and whatnot. And I mean, obviously I graduated university and was working a full-time job after that, but I was like most of us and like most bodybuilders who work full-time jobs and go to school and stuff, I ate out of a Tupperware, literally six, seven meals a day for 4+ years. I was showing up at, I still did some social things in the early stages of preps and I'd go to parties with salmon in a container and stuff like.
At least you were jacked, bro. I was doing it like after losing like 140 pounds and being still skinny fat. And I would show up to a wedding with like fucking Tupperwares. You know how big people think you are when you're a 150 pound guy eating fucking out of Tupperwares.
Hey.
And now I look back on that and I'm like, yeah, that was probably too much. But like,
I have a hilarious story about weddings and meals. And okay, do you guys want to hear a funny story for a minute?
We'll just continue this on. We'll end this after this is good.
So I'm 2 weeks out. I'm 2 weeks out of Nationals in 2017. I had a close friend's wedding, and he was marrying an East Indian lady, and obviously I don't know if you've ever seen East Indian weddings. They are wild. They are days and days and days long. We went to, for the actual like wedding itself, we went to a temple, and I believe that's what it's called. I apologize if I'm mixing up my terminology here. And we're sitting on the floor cross-legged and whatnot, and this gentleman comes around and he's got like a big bucket in his arms, and it almost looks like Weetabix and oatmeal kind of combined. And he's got a glove on, and it's like a little, like almost like a slop in this bowl. And everyone's putting their hand, crossing their hands in front of them, and he's walking around and he's putting in your hands, and you're just taking it and eating it. And it's just this, I guess, I don't know, tiny little ball of this stuff. But let's remember, I'm OCD as hell, and I'm 2 weeks out. Now, I've been sitting on the floor of this wedding, and he comes to me, and I'm surrounded by a bunch of my buddies, and I'm sitting there and like, there is no way I'm eating this. I'm 2 weeks out. There's no chance I'm putting this in my body. And not thinking that this is a religious thing and it's part of their celebration that they do, he looks at me and goes to give it to me, and I just go like, no, thank you. And man, the look I got, the entire place started staring at me, and I was like, this is bad. So I just put my hands out and I took it and I put it in my mouth and I just let it sit in my mouth. I did nothing. I just let
for
it
how
sit
long there. Wait, for how long?
It was about 15 minutes before I could get up and spit it out. So I couldn't talk, I couldn't do anything. I was just sitting there with this blob in my mouth. To this day, I'm not sure what it was or whatever, but for me, it was one of those things where I was just like, yeah, no way in hell am I doing this right now.
It was, it was in the saliva, so you were getting it anyway.
Oh yeah, I was, it ruined my whole prep. That's why I got seventh at Nationals and not first.
Yeah, you didn't win.
That's the separation between first and seventh.
Yeah, but no, this is where I was going with that. It's funny because I went from eating 6 or 7 meals a day out of Tupperwares for 4+ years, whatever, right? And always being on the go and having my meals with me, and then transitioning to working from home full time and being like, this is amazing. I can make my food fresh every day. I don't have to eat out of Tupperwares. I can heat it up on the stove. Unbelievable. Then now we're at a place where I'm going back. I don't want to make my meal fresh anymore. I do not want to eat fresh. I want Tupperware waiting for me in the fridge. I want to pop it in the microwave or just quickly blast it in a pan to heat it up just so it's hot enough to get it down my gullet and be on with my day. Like, realistically, that's what I want, and I'm craving that. So that's essentially why I'm using a meal prep service now. And it's, like you said, saving me time, man. If there's an hour every couple of days I'm spending cooking that I can cut out of my life, that's amazing for me, and I'm going to utilize that. And again, I think the cost versus the opportunity cost and whatnot, right? And then the time saving, for me, it just makes sense. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to continuing to do it that way. And yeah.
Nice.
I would say they cook food a lot better. Like, I did it when I was in Texas. I got whatever MegaFit meals. I can tell you, it tastes a lot better than what I cook, probably.
For sure. And like, that's also a caveat there, right? Like, and this is, again, I won't continue going here. I know we got to cut this thing off. I could talk for days, but would I ever utilize it if I was doing a prep or I was in a diet phase or something? I personally can't. I don't think it's ideal. I'm too OCD. I need, like, I'm measuring things to the gram. Everything that's going in my body is measured. You know what I mean? So I'm not ignorant to the fact that if you're using a meal prep service, it's probably going to be very high quality if you're doing your research. And like I said, I actually coach the individuals who own Just Bite Me Meals, the company that I'm getting mine from. But and
he's,
I know,
like, it better be right.
Or I'll tell you what, they do a bang up job. They're not using excess oils and stuff like that. But for myself, if I'm on a contest prep or whatnot, I just mentally, I got to be cooking my food and weighing my food and putting it on my plate myself and knowing where it's coming from and whatnot. Right. So that's for me. But right now, man, I'm just trying to grow and have fun in the gym and coach my athletes. So definitely suits my lifestyle better.
Awesome. Well, we'll definitely do a part two, whether that's like next week or within a few weeks. If we just want to do our Q&A episodes, we can do all three of us just do Q&A episodes whenever we want to whack on a Q&A. But no, this was good. Hopefully people took away a lot. Hopefully people are still listening. I don't even know if people are still listening at this point, to be honest. But if you are, we appreciate it. If you could, go subscribe to the podcast. Go give us a 5-star rating and review on Apple. Share that you're listening. Tag Braden, tag Dylan, tag me on your story. Share it with a friend. Maybe they might learn some things from this. I definitely think we touched on a lot of things, from physique enhancement to women's health, to even a little bit about training. But we'll definitely hit more questions. So
yeah,
next time we run a Q&A, it will all be on our pages or even just our stories. So make sure you get in your good questions if you want them answered. And then we'll go from there. So Braden, thanks for coming on. And
absolutely, man. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for everyone for listening to this episode of the Ace of Spada podcast.